Welcome to Catholic Stuff You Should Know, the J10 Initiative.
Welcome to the podcast. This is Father Sean.
And Father John.
Aren't you happy I didn't do my normal introduction?
I know, you're grown up. It's great to see.
Oh, it was felt awkward. I didn't know what to say there. I felt like I took your introduction. Hey, welcome to the podcast. This is Father John.
I know. We all have our weird kind of things. Father Mike hates that. He's hated it for 13 years, but, you know, it's just what we do.
So what you do.
Well, I'm happy we got you some coffee because I know I kind of bored you a little bit on the last topic.
You did not bore me. It was actually really fascinating. I just hit a wall after three masses, preaching three times.
That's a lot. Back to back to back.
Boom, boom, boom. The three morning ones can. This is, I don't know, like, we part of it's like we have a small parking lot, but some churches it'll be like 90 minutes apart. So you have like a mass at 8 a.m. and then 9:30. And then, like, I don't know, when you have 30, 45 minutes to kill in between mass, sometimes yeah. It's like, that's not a great time. So
yeah, it's a big, it's a tall order for morning, and then afternoons you just need to relax. And unfortunately you're chatting it up with me.
That's right. So. And then tonight I'm going to Colorado School of Mines to hang out with Father Chris and see him in his territory.
Oh, are you? Okay. Yeah. Very nice. So they're heading on a mission trip to Belize, which I hear is pretty bougie.
Is it really?
Yeah, Belize? Oh, okay. I don't know. That's what I hear. I've
been to Peru once. That was not bougie. Well, I guess certain areas where Lima was. Lima feels like you're in America, honestly.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. I mean, we were in the, like, nicer parts. We were right down the street from the embassy, and it was a really nice area.
Okay. Very nice. We got a big gala coming up for the seminary, 25 years, which is a great celebration happening on St. Patrick's Day. We are raising money for this new rec center, which is going to be open to priests. So up for you as well.
Yeah, but by the time it's built, I'll be like just sent off to, like, I don't know, Steamboat or like somewhere in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, dude, if you go to Steamboat, that'd be amazing.
That would be. It's actually kind of a dream of mine.
You're not going to Steamboat. Don't get that in your head. They just sent a new priest up there. So
true.
Father Chris Considine, who you're going to see tonight, was skiing. He was skiing the champagne powder of Steamboat.
That's true.
It's amazing.
So. He's so funny. He didn't get a ski pass this year, which I commanded him in fraternal group. I'm like, just get a ski pass. It's going to be amazing. But he did go skiing one time this year, so I am proud of him for that.
He did. That's true. That's true. We can't give him a hard time.
That's so. Right. Just a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, good. Yeah. This will come right out after Easter. I must say thank you to all our listeners and listener land out there. Last time I pleaded and prodded of, like, I'm running dry on topics, give me some topics, and then I got like hundreds of emails over the course of the next week so thank you for sending all those. I have been slowly going through them, of just like which ones kind of in what order, which ones, yeah, I mean, just to be honest, some of these topics, like, aren't podcast worthy, dare I say. So just trying to figure out which ones we can do on air, which ones
what do you determine as podcast worthy? Because,
well, what's tricky is maybe I could just go through some of them. Some of them are just going to be short answers, right?
Okay.
And then do I just compile those and just maybe do like one podcast on short little questions? Others, like, I just don't know the topic very well. And certainly you could do the research there, but I don't know when. Some of them are like very pointed questions about like books or whatever that either I haven't read yet. Like one guy had a question on, like, can you compare and contrast the difference between like Dei Verbum and the different like encyclicals and church documents on interpretation of scripture? And I'm like, yeah, maybe I could do that, but that's probably a better topic for rap anyways. So there's a lot of things there that I'm just gonna require some good research, good reading, which it's good. I need to be challenged in that. So
there you go.
So anyways, thank you for all that feedback. Probably the main question that came up honestly was the topic of some sort of evangelization. So that's kind of what I want to talk about tonight. And a lot of the, or today, or whatever time you're listening to this on April 4th, during this Easter season. But a lot of questions of like, how do I talk to my brother who's left the faith? I have, you know, one person was like, I have multiple kids. Two of them are practicing, two of them are not practicing. How do I get them to come back home to the church? And I think it's just a particular question for a lot of people of, how do I evangelize? How do I bring the faith? How do I talk to people about the faith? Which is a great question, because it's hard to talk to people about the faith. It's intimidating to talk to people about the faith. How do we do it? how do we approach it? So that's kind of essentially what we want to dive in today.
Sounds great. Let's do it.
So thinking about this, I think, and in connection with this, another question was, can you explain the kerygma? What is it and how would you do it? And certainly we can get to that in a minute. But I just want to start off with a little bit of scripture here from 1 Peter 3:15. Do you know what 1 Peter 3:15 is, Father John?
I don't.
Well, let me read it to you. Always be prepared to make a defense to anyone who calls you to account for the hope that is in you, yet do it with gentleness and reverence.
Nice.
Love it.
Yeah.
Good verse, right? Always be prepared to make a defense. So people come up to you and ask you, you know, like, why are you smiling? Why are you joyful? So I think that's the first step to evangelization anyways, of like, be joyful, live your life in a holy way. And people are going to see a spark in you. People are going to see something in you and they're going to say, I want what that person has, right? I want to be a part of that. I want to get to know that person. So oftentimes I'm teaching RCIA this year, which has been a great gift. It's also intimidating sometimes. We have an amazing class. You've taught RCIA in the past, haven't you?
It's the best. Yeah, I love it.
It is the best. We have about 35 people entering the church this year.
That's great.
Which is crazy. I would like to shout out my pastor who asked me to teach RCIA, but also has set up, Lord's has become known for its good RCIA program. And so I don't think I would have had 35 people if had he not been teaching for 10 years. So a great gift, but RCIA is a lot of times it's people who are already seeking, they're already looking for the answers. That's evangelization, but then there's something that we call pre-evangelization, which is just as much important. How would you describe pre-evangelization? Or have you heard that? Have you heard that?
I've heard, I almost said, like the things we do before evangelization. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that pre-evangelization is key in the sense that we can't assume that people care. That assume that they're just going to be like, wow, you're so joyful, and I want the secret to your joy. What is the secret to your joy?
Sure, yeah.
Oh, you're a Christian? Okay, I want to be Christian. I'm going to repent of my life and move out from living with my girlfriend. It's like, well, sometimes that happens, but a lot of times it's just like, it's just a human experience of connection, friendship, and then stepping into life together. I think that's a lot of like pre-evangelization is relationship based.
Yeah.
Before the actual articulation of the proclamation.
Right. Yeah, 100%. And I think that's I think the heart of it. And so a lot of the questions of like, how do I talk to my brother about this? How do I challenge my, you know, sibling or my sister or whatever? I think this is what it comes down to of just like, I don't think it's the right time to challenge them yet. You'll know when it's the right time. I think what's so key is the pre-evangelization, just talking to them, doing things with them. And I'll be honest, like this is something I'm not great at. Usually if I don't agree with someone, it's really hard to spend time with them, right? If you don't agree with someone on politics or whatever, and then politics comes up at the Thanksgiving dinner table, right? Which never happens. It's hard to sit there and get through it, right? And then it's hard to go skiing with them. It's hard to do things. But I think what's so key to that, I should say, is spending time with the other person and not bringing up those controversial topics or not bringing up what you guys disagree upon. Just going skiing, going in the backcountry, climbing that 14er with the Hanyak and just saying, tell me about your experience of life. Tell me about your experience of God, and not worrying about the right answers or trying to actually hit the faith home within them, but just going on adventure with them.
Right? Yeah, I agree. Now, sometimes you don't like the people you're talking to. I don't like the Hanyak. I still right. don't like the Hanyak.
Sure.
But I think the key here is, are we living Christianity as a duty or as an attraction? That's the question. Because if it's an attraction, as if we're living with hearts that are fully alive with humanity, that is just, that's just active and engaging and interested and kind of passionately seeking truth wherever it can be found. I think that that's compelling, even if we don't like the people. It helps if you like them.
Yeah, for sure. My watch is buzzing. Sorry. I remember in seminary, you told me a story about you were at a coffee shop. I believe it was St. Mark's Coffee Shop. And you go inside, and the barista says, "Why are you wearing that?" Do you remember the story?
Yeah. He said, "What are you?"
Yeah. What did you say? Do you remember?
I said, "I'm a Catholic priest." And he said, "What's that?" And he was dead serious.
Yeah. Which is crazy, right? Yeah. And so my point of bringing that one up is, always be prepared to give a defense for your faith. There's so often times, so many times where people are going to come up to you and maybe you're walking out of church. It's just like, why are you just in there? You know, and certainly priests, we wear something that signifies something. But do you have like a 30 second quip, if you will, of like why you go to mass, like why you believe? And I guess to get into it, I think there's the pre-evangelization, which we just hit on. Is it a duty? What did you say? Is it a duty or a
attraction?
And if you're living the faith not out of a duty but out of like a joy of this is what, like, this is the person I'm in love with, and there's just like an ease to it. And then there's the evangelization of when people ask and people open the door for you to speak into something.
Yeah.
And for you, it's like, or for us as priests, it's like, yeah, what are you? I love that question. It reminds me of a story. When I was at a pizza shop once, and we were all seminarians at the time, so all of us had our clerics on. None of us were priests yet, but we were traveling.
Classic seminarians,
right.
Just cruising around eating pizza with their clerics on, which they're not supposed to be doing.
Like we're not supposed to be doing. There was one priest with us. He said we should wear clerics and keep them on, but one of the formators. But this like little kid goes up to me, and he's just like, "Why are you guys all dressed like that?" And I said, "Oh, we're seminarians studying to be Catholic priests." And same question. I'm just like, "What's that?" You know? And it's just like, what am I supposed to say to that? Like, what is a Catholic priest? And we just like assume everyone knows what they are. And I don't know. He was probably like 5 or 6. And I just like very simply said like, "Oh, well, we wear this because we're set apart to do the work of Jesus Christ for him and his church." I said something like that. And the little kid just like smiled and go, "Oh, cool," and then walked away.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he understood anything, but like, what is your defense of the faith when people ask? So there's the pre-evangelization, then there's the evangelization of when people open that door for it to come.
And I think we have to distinguish between the state of life, how you stand in relationship to Christ. That's where we get the word state, status in Latin. How you stand in relationship to him determines how you engage in mission, which is what pre-evangelization, evangelization, catechesis, all these things tie into. 98% or 99% of the people listening to this are in the lay state, which means they are baptized and their consecration flows from their baptism, and the life of faith is active and it's lived out in the world in order to transform the world in Christ, to communicate and elevate the world through the temporal sphere. You have occupations, you have jobs, like you live, you coach sports teams, you have a neighborhood. These are things. For them, I think you guys are like the resistance, like it's the undercover.
Yeah.
Like we have a different thing. You know, we're like the FBI. That's how people look at us. Like we show up and it's like, "Oh geez, here we go." So like, we have a very different way of evangelizing as priests, as do a religious. Mm-hmm. Very, very different. The lay state is going to be the broadest sphere. It's also going to be the most subtle, and it which doesn't mean it can't be the most powerful, because it really does fall to the laity to evangelize the world primarily. Mm-hmm. But it has to be explicated in a unique way. So people have to know that you're Catholic, and again, living that Catholic faith as an attraction, not as some kind of moralistic obligation or duty, is going to be the key. They find your humanity compelling. Mm. And that's what elicits and opens the questions of why. Mm. And that's what we want.
Yeah.
Openness. Pre-evangelization is about opening somebody, disposing them to hear Christ.
Yeah. I love it. And that's why I love how you just use the word humanity. Like, if we're not human, if we're like robots or automatons or this like Christian robot, right? What are there? There's like cowboys and robots and whatever, right? If you're just a robot, no one's going to want, like, that's not inspiring. Like, you're just going to be like doing the motions and no one's going to want to follow you. Remember when we were in Switzerland and there's that great on top of the Klein Matterhorn, that crucifix. Have you ever talked about this on the podcast?
Mammoth Sein?
Yes. I love that, right? So on top of this mountain that we went to climb, the Klein Matterhorn, which means the fake Matterhorn. It's not the real one.
The little Matterhorn.
We get to the top and there's this beautiful crucifix. You leave it to the Swiss to put on top of a mountain. And in three different languages, the first one being German, was that beautiful phrase underneath the crucifix.
Mehr Mensch sein.
Which means be more human. Be more human. I always found that interesting. One, being on the top of a mountain, pretty isolated, right? Not many people are going to see that crucifix. But then two, like, why on a crucifix does it say be more human? That's what it comes down to. Like, Christ's claim, Christ coming to the world, incarnation, should make us more human, to flourish, to live humanly, not as robots.
That will forever be one of the most fascinating insights into the heart of Christianity, I think, that we've ever experienced. Mm. I don't know what arranged that or what insight came with that, but Mehr Mensch sein, I mean, when we saw that, it was just like, this is it. This is the call. There's a chapter in my book on that, you know, talks about humanity, because we get caught up in our heads about saying, having all the right answers, right? Because that line from First Peter chapter 3, have a defense, apologia is the Greek, or apologia, where we get the word apologetic. Defense, you got to be able to defend the faith. Why do Catholics hate gay people? You have to make a defense. Now that's impossible because that's not actually a question. Mm. That's a statement.
Sure.
And that's part of the kind of the tricky thing about kind of sorting these things out in a modern ideological world. But sometimes we get too defensive. We're too apologetic in the sense of defense, not that we're apologizing, but just that we're too combative. We're too ready. We just got to like sit back and be like, I remember Curtis Martin telling a story of like when he first started dating Marianne, Michael Ann, Martin. We love Marianne Martin also, but Michael Ann Martin. And if they will not listen to this podcast, but if they do and they can correct this story, but I love this. And I guess Curtis was a fallen away Catholic and he was kind of like hammering her about different things about Mary and purgatory and the usual things. And she just was like, you know, I actually don't. No, I don't have a good answer to that. Let me get back to you on that. Mm. And he found that so compelling because what it did is it pointed to the authority of the church. Mm. It wasn't just all on her that she is this kind of self-subsisting Catholic entity who has all the answers and can kind of just compute them out right out of the Baltimore Catechism out of her mind, but she actually has to turn to the magisterium, the teacher, the mother, to help her understand it.
Yeah.
And that was for Curtis really important, apparently.
Yeah. That's beautiful. Yeah. I love that. That's interesting how he realized.
I hope that's a true story.
Yeah. I love how he articulated as like, this points to the authority of the church, that like, it's not just you trying to figure out your best answer, but it's like, oh, there's actually like an authoritative church, I guess, interpretation, magisterium, that's behind what you're actually believing. So it's not just like you're making up a defense, right? But it's something authoritative. I love that. That's really cool. But to that point, like, yeah, if you get too defensive in evangelization, it actually backfires. And so the kind of point that I want to drive home here is the kerygma, right? So someone asked, like, can you talk about the kerygma? How would you articulate it? How would you talk about it? And I personally love this question because oftentimes we're given very small windows and very small opportunities to proclaim the good news. So kerygma means it's the basic kind of teaching of the gospel message, right? Yeah, would you elaborate on that, or was that fair to say?
Yeah, no, it's totally true. The kerygmatic is the preaching and the presentation of the reason I paused and laughed was because I was reminded of a story that Garansky told. He was a young novice. Garansky was our spiritual father. He was a very funny Jesuit who passed away 7 years ago. And he sits down. He sits down at breakfast, and he's all like excited to be a new Jesuit. And this old crusty guy across from the table at him, He sits down. He's like, "Hey, Father, you having a good morning?" And the priest just takes a long drag of his cigarette, this old Jesuit. And he goes, "He was born, he suffered, and he died." And he puts his cigarette in his eggs and walks away. And Gronsky always like would tell that as like, you missed the point of the kerygma. It doesn't end with he suffered and died, and then you put your cigarette out in the eggs. It was just the salty old dog. And so really, proclaiming good news. Mm. Like, we forget we have something good to say.
Yeah.
Really, really good. Like, the best news. Instead of, we have to kind of apologize because we've been put into this, we've been pigeonholed against that we hate everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And that we're just the one thing, this is the one institution keeping the progress of humanity from reaching its utopian dream, as we've talked about in the last podcast. It's like, no, we have good news, which is that you're lost and that you can be found because God became man and rose from the dead.
Mm.
Like, that's the good news. That's the kerygma.
Yeah. And I think that points it in the direction of like, this is not just like, we're not on the defensive, right? The church has always been on the offense. The gates of the netherworld shall not prevail against it. Gates are meant to keep people out, not in. Like, the gates shall not prevail against the church, meaning like the church is on the offense. Like, we're going in to bring people closer to the Lord. That's our job. That's our duty in the church. If we're on the offense, like, we're proclaiming good news. It's not just like we're just waiting for people to condemn us and attack us and be like, oh no, well, let me give you a reason for why we actually believe all that. That's important. Know those things. But the proposal today in evangelization is to share the good news, to share the joy, to share the good news of the gospel. So the basic kerygma message, the basic gospel message, I think has four steps. The first one being goodness. You're created good. God loves you. There's goodness in this world. You look out and there's a beauty of creation. There's a beauty of what's around you. And this is why we love going into the outdoors. This is why we love the backcountry. I was preaching today about the temple a little bit, and I made the comparison to national parks, right? Everyone loves national parks. Everyone loves going to the wilderness because it's like this sacred space of beauty, of creation, that's marked off to say something is special about this, and we preserve it. Nothing else can touch this. So the first part of the charismatic message is to say, like, life is good. God is good. Creation is good. There's goodness in this world. But step number two is, but we don't always experience the goodness. Something happened. There's tragedy within this world. Literally, like, what the hell happened? Hell has entered. Darkness has entered. There's suffering in this world. Why is it that I do the things I don't want to do, but don't do the things that I want to do, as St. Paul says? Like, why do I find things so messed up? Why don't I get along with family members? Why don't I get along with friends? Why is there so much discord and division in my life? The fall happened. Sin entered the world. Yes, things are still good, but we've experienced a lot of discord in our life. And then step three to the kerygma is, in the midst of the tragedy, in the midst of the discord, God breaks into the world. God breaks into your life. And this is where you always point towards the crucifixion and death of the Lord and the crusty old Jesuit. That's hilarious. You can't forget about the resurrection, right? That's everything. God saves us from the discord, the division, the tragedy, the sin. God rescues you from that, from the messiness of life, from the chaos, from the sin, so that the fourth step would be so that we can live with him and have joy and that goodness can be restored within us.
I was thinking about the first step, which people often take kind of natively, but separate from the Creator. Mm. So we talk about nature all the time.
Right.
Not creation.
Right.
We've replaced that word.
Because creation
implies a relationship.
And a creator, right.
And a creator. So, but we think of nature as good. So you think about these guys like John Muir, who I really love and respect, who were the founder, kind of the founding fathers of the national park system. And then fast forward another century to Edward Abbey. Did you ever read The Desert Solitaire?
Mm-mm.
It's this guy who in the 50s, I think, goes out to Utah and he's in Canyonlands or Arches, one of those national parks, and it's very kind of primitive mode. And then he talks about living out there for the summers, but then he kind of bewails the building of the damming of the Colorado River and the building up of the national park system. And then he, in his later years, great writer, but gets more and more aggressive against the government and gets involved in eco-terrorism and where they're blowing up, you know, Chalets and Vail and things like this. And, and so what it shows is an inability to deal with that second point, which is, where do we locate evil? Excuse me. In ourselves or in structures and systems and others? That's Marxism. That's the Marxist power critique, is like, it's the structures of the problem. So I think that understanding sin as deforming humanity, as causing this kind of this very grave illness, it doesn't destroy nature, but it does deeply, deeply wound it. That's the, somehow we gotta get that back into people. And everybody's like, I don't want to hear about that. I want to hear about the good news. And it's like, well, this is some of the good news. Is that, as Chesterton says, original sin is the only doctrine of the church that you can prove just by looking at humanity.
Right.
And it's like, it's good news to know you're fallen. So you're, if you actually pay attention to the internal monologue that's operating in every human being all the time, which is crazy, then you're like, this is good, because this isn't the end. But this is good that I know that I'm fallen. I'm not complete. I need redemption.
Right. Yeah. And redemption, I think, is probably the climax of the story, right? Not just I think, but that is the climax of the story. Like, God becomes man to save us from our wretchedness, from our brokenness, right? This is God breaking into the world, right? The, what was that book we read, Rescued or whatever? Like, God rescues. It's like the image of this is a rescue mission, military speaking, that like God goes behind enemy lines to rescue you from that, to bring you to the right side, to bring you to redemption. So if you don't see that we are sinners and broken and have that original sin, then you have no need for redemption. And I think what's so key with proclaiming the good news is precisely the redemption point. God doesn't want you to live in suffering, right? God doesn't want you to live in brokenness. God doesn't want your unhappiness. He desires so much more for you. And what that means is to bring you out of that and bring you into a deeper relationship with Him. And I think that speaks to the human heart at its core. I don't know how, though, to connect the points earlier, like, I don't know how to convince people of that unless they're open to it. You can't convince people of it, right?
Right. And I think that if we think of pre-evangelization as opening people, like, a lot of people in your RCIA are being evangelized because they were open. But at some point, I mean, I went out for lunch yesterday with a couple that I met several years ago, backcountry skiing. I don't know if they really liked me. I didn't particularly like them.
Sure.
But we definitely, there was a connection for sure. One's not Catholic, one's fallen away Catholic. And they reached out 3 years later and they're like, hey, we're thinking about getting married and we're wondering about such and such. And, you know, just like, yeah, let's have a conversation. Openness. Openness. I just baptized Ian Malum's baby. Ian was a student of ours, or a student of mine. You were a child back then. You were 18. we went to Switzerland together.
Yeah, we were on the Switzerland
trip. You were on the Switzerland trip together. And Ian said his own journey, and his wife Rachel, same thing. And again, there was a moment when we met years ago before COVID, that kind of dark ages, you know, COVID thing prior to that. And I said, this is what Catholic marriage is, and love to walk with you guys and support it, but you got to want it. Don't just do it for grandma. And they said, okay, we'll get back to you. COVID happened. And then they came, they were like, yeah, we want this. And that's pre-evangelization. We often skip that. And we jump right into evangelization. And even worse is we skip evangelization and we go into catechesis.
Catechesis, right.
Which is, catechesis comes from the Greek word to echo. So you're actually instructing and forming in the faith. So you're catechizing as well as evangelizing in RCIA, OCIA, whatever it's called now. But catechesis is the giving of the content of the faith in a systematic presentation, but it presumes evangelization. I just had marriage prep with Casey and Katie, two of our favorite people, getting married in a couple months. They were asking some great questions about the nature of baptism and grace and these things. Catechetical moment. They care. They brought that question to me. Why do they care? Because they've been evangelized.
Yeah.
They know Jesus.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like openness, relationship, and then you can give the content. And we kind of, sadly, are filling kids with content, but we're missing that first step.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's why, like, one of the greatest joys for me as a priest is, as you just mentioned, the relationship within marriage prep and being able to walk with couples, because there's some couples who think they're like, to use St. Teresa's language, they think they're in like the sixth or seventh mansion, and all they want to do is like have these heady theological conversations, which is fine. Of course, we'll do that. They need human formation, mare mensch sign, like they need to be more human. But then there's couples who like, as you mentioned, like, are they just getting in the married in the church because so that their parents will pay for their wedding, you know, things like that. And to be able to walk with them. And I've seen some really radical conversions in people of, they were probably there for the wrong reasons at first. And then you see the way that they begin to have this openness just based on a relationship and just walking with them and just saying, hey, I'm going to walk with you guys. And just the little bites of content or whatever that you give them, it's just like a slow opening. And as we've talked about before, like, you have to play the long game with these people. It's not just like they're going to convert overnight. It's the long game that you're looking for. I don't know, maybe in 3 years, maybe in 5 years. But there's such power for me, I see, and joy of the priesthood of, like, when you walk with someone for long term and you see the radical conversion that they have over the course of those years.
Yep. Amen.
It's super powerful. So I don't know where you're at with that. I hope this is helpful for those few questions about, how do you evangelize? How do you talk to people? I think the biggest thing I would really encourage you in is don't force it. It's really hard to evangelize family anyways. And so you can't force it, you know? I think
that's a big part. It's just knowing, reading the room, so to speak, of like, okay, maybe I have a rocky relationship with my kid, or maybe they're just in a very defensive place for whatever reason. Back off. Now, it's always fun to try and get them around other people, because that's oftentimes who's going to evangelize their families, other people. Mm-hmm. My sister was evangelized by a Baptist kid she met at CSU, who became Catholic, and she married him.
Yeah.
So it wasn't her awesome seminary brothers who were actually torturing her.
Yeah.
So that's, I think that's it. We put a lot of pressure on ourselves to fix people's problems and their lack of faith, and we can't. It's God's work. So everything comes back to prayer, to really deeply believing in intercession, that it's very powerful. And then you stay tuned. You never know.
Yeah. Never know. You got to walk with people, though. And I think the invitation is always what's important. So the church never imposes. She always proposes. And all you have to do is just make that statement of, hey, I'm going to Mass. Do you want to come with me? You know, we propose, but we never force.
And a lot of evangelization is Christians who have become disenchanted, who have to become re-enchanted. But being re-enchanted is different than being enchanted.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, your little kids here at Lord's, so beautiful. They're enchanted by the faith. It's like, it's a beautiful thing. And we did a whole thing on, you remember that podcast we did on the bicycles? C.S. Lewis? Maybe I did it with somebody else.
Yeah, that was
it. He talks about these different stages. But we have to understand we're dealing with disenchanted, disenfranchised, lapsed, and maybe disaffiliated Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, C.S. Lewis describes it as like, when you're dealing with fallen away Catholic or fallen away Christians, it's like somebody has been through divorce and they're thinking about a relationship again.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different kind of criteria. They don't have just that native openness to, maybe I'll do this, but there's something there of like, there's going to be hesitancy in the heart because they left this.
Mm.
They maybe didn't even know they did, but they did. So,
Yeah, that's very true. So maybe we'll leave it there. I guess the last encouragement would just be, I encourage you, practice the kerygma. I remember in one of our classes, we had to get up in front of the class and just practice 2 minutes, proclaim the kerygma right now. And then we got critiqued on it. And that could be a really good exercise of, again, always have a defense ready. Like, if someone stops you in an elevator and says like, oh, what's that cross you're wearing on your neck? Why do you wear that? Do you have 60 seconds, 30 seconds of what you would say to someone who asks you, why do you believe in Jesus Christ? Because he suffered, died, for me. He gave his life for me, and I want to give my life for him now. Something as simple as that, but practice it. Always be ready to defend, to give that, the witness to the good news. God has given you good news in your life. Can you give good news to other people?
Beautiful.
Thanks, right, Father John.
Doing shout-outs?
Shout-outs. You got to go celebrate Mass.
I got to go celebrate Mass, but I got time for two shout-outs.
Go for
it. First off, seminarians, if I ever hear you complaining you don't have time to read, I'm going to have you call my friend Susan Severson, who read, I think she has four kids, mm-hmm, pregnant with the fifth, maybe with the fourth, Crosby, Minnesota, read Olaf Andersen,
yes,
in 10 days,
yes,
all four volumes.
That's awesome.
1,300 pages. She joked with me. She said, I'm trying to find my children under piles of laundry now. But I am so impressed with that. And just to say, we have to keep reading. Mm. And nobody can read like that. That's incredible. But I'm just very inspired. A shout out to a podcast listener. Podcast on Olaf Andersen by Sigrid Undset. For those of you who are Kristen Lovren's fans, that is coming. That's in the pipeline.
Great.
If you didn't know what any of those Norwegian words meant, don't worry about it. And then to two other ladies, a shout out. Donna Walker and Leo Beyer both told me, quit complaining about how old you are. So more maternal correction. That seems to be the theme of the month.
Yes.
But I got a sweet note from Leo that I'm holding right here. So thank you, Leo. We had a wonderful time seeing you and your family. And Donna, it was great to see you as well. So thanks for the maternal corrections. That should conclude this season for me. We'll go back to the regular episodes of fraternal correction from the companions.
But awesome.
Wonderful people.
Great. Well, I got two shouts as well. One, Father John McFadden. I went to seminary with him. He reached out and just, I can't remember if I gave you a shout out or not, so sorry if this is doubled, but he's for the Rockford Diocese, and he's currently a parochial vicar. And tragically, he said his pastor passed away. His pastor died like unexpectedly, and he had to celebrate the funeral for his own pastor, or at least preach it at the parish and stuff. And he said, just like, there was a couple podcasts that we did on, Jacob and I actually did a podcast on remedies for sorrow. So hopefully Megan Nix will add a little bit more to that as well. But Father John, well done. Thank you for listening to the podcast. I'm happy that that helped. And then the other one, Sunday Best, someone sent me an article about clothing. Nathan Aaron, thank you for that article.
Nathan.
I have yet to read it. I'll read it this week. It came in the mail yesterday. So
he's another voracious reader.
Is yep. he? Okay.
Yep.
He sent stuff to you before?
Yep.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, Nathan. Thanks for listening. Thank you for that article. I can't remember who it was by, but I'm excited to dive into it.
All right, Shiny Boy. We will be back in 2 weeks with our friend Megan Nix and closing out this trimester, I guess. So this
that's right.
Third of the year.
Yep.
We're going to be handing off here to other guys, but it's been a joy.
Absolutely. Great to be with you today. Catholic Stuff Podcast at gmail.com. Send us any questions, comments you may have.
All right. Thanks for listening.